remind people that that we have we're about to celebrate the year anniversary of our podcast.
We are.
I'm excited.
Hopefully this comes out before that, because then we're just going to remind people after the fact.
Well, you know, nonetheless, it's like we've been doing this for about
before,
a year.
Remind you after.
We're doing a special pop-up to celebrate the year anniversary at the Emporium pop-up in Logan Square. We're doing 3 days, November 9th through the 11th. We're going to have conversations, and we're going to have a lot of visual artists in the building. We're building out a kind of pop-up corner store.
Yes, and shout out Max, because
for doing all that
this.
Work.
Yeah.
Shout out Jorge and Emporium. Shout out Stolen Spirits,
yes.
Our sponsor who's helping us with that effort. We're going to have DJs in the evening, and it's going to be in the month of November, November 9th through the 11th. So please, please come out and help us celebrate the year anniversary of talking with Chicago Creatives and Beyond.
And Kevin and my banter.
That's right.
That's like the secondary star of the show.
Although I will say people...
But listen, it's really the first time.
I don't want to say
primary.
It.
Okay. You know
what I mean? It is what it is. But tonight, Tara, we have a dear friend in the building.
Yes.
Someone who
For me,
is
a new friend.
A new friend.
Yes.
Someone
lovely,
who,
lovely new friend.
So this is what it is that, you know, there are people who are behind the scenes who might not be the name that's on the marquee, but they are the ones who do the work to construct a universe. And the woman who is with us tonight is someone who not only has, you know, helped to build and solidify, I think, the maintenance of a Chicago music industry, but is someone who has ushered, you know, young people and put on for young people in this city to create a life. To create a life for themselves, to create a life for their family. This is a woman who I think cares deeply about culture, who cares deeply about art, who cares deeply about you know, the future of young people in the city and beyond. And so, in the corner store tonight, we have Colleen Mayers.
Hey. Hello, friends.
Hey.
That was so nice.
These are
you were gonna make me cry.
Kevin, real nice with the intros. Also, the first Colleen, as many.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
First new US. Yes.
Colleen, first of all, welcome. Thank you so much
for
being here.
Thank you for having me. This is a beautiful space.
Thanks for coming.
We're excited to have you. And before we get started and delve into your life story, we have
offerings,
some snacks for you.
Oh, I
in
love
the corner
snacks.
Store. So, you know, first and foremost, you know, you are enjoying some of our stolen spirits. We're off of the stolen whiskey this evening.
Mm-hmm.
And you're on like a little Chicago mix. How are you enjoying your beverage tonight?
It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Good.
Only good things to say about Stolen.
There you go. We also have, shit. Oh, yeah. Well, here we are. We also have for you, in addition to the whiskey, we have some Giardelli milk chocolate with caramel.
Fire.
That's for you. A bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not stop there. We also have some extreme sour Airhead candy. They're rainbow berry flavored. So I hope you have a dentist.
Thank you so much.
And enjoy those.
I do. I just got a Chicago dentist years of being traveling back to my parents' homeland to go to the dentist. I now have a Chicago dentist.
Well, that's
I've only been here
be like that,
10
though?
Years.
Well,
but I have finally got one.
All of my doctors are in St. Louis. So.
I just got an Illinois ID last week.
Oh, I feel like I'm going to hang on to my Missouri ID.
That's how I felt.
But also my photo real good.
That's how I felt.
You just like got to hold on to the real good photo.
Mine expired. And let me tell you how out here you are with an expired ID. I didn't think it was a big deal.
Anything.
When you're like me and you people don't think you're 21 and that. Like, but people look at me and they're like, no, she's not 21. I was denied alcohol more times in the last month than in my entire life. Like, and not just like, oh, you can't get into this bar. No, like, I was trying to buy like a single Corona at Whole Foods. And she was like, your ID's expired. And I was like, but it's me. You can tell it's me, but. What, like, it's expired. It says Wisconsin. Like, how am I going to get it?
That's how they know you're
she was like,
trickery,
no.
though.
You trickery.
Know?
Right.
You get the out-of-state joint. It's expired.
Right.
Then, you know, they don't want
right.
to get, you know, because you know, you look youthful.
I'm
forever
saying.
Young,
I know.
You know?
I
Rod
do.
Stewart. You know what I mean?
But now I am officially
in Illinois.
Yeah. Well, I have the ID. I've been voting here. I have Illinois plates on my car.
Okay. You've been voting here?
Yeah. With a Wisconsin ID.
That's wild. How'd they let you in?
White privilege.
So
that's if you're white, they let you vote.
They're like, yo,
really
listen,
though.
That's fair.
I swear, come on.
Well, so all right, so let's take it back though. So you know, first of all, Colleen is you know, deeply invested in this music scene. But before we talk about, you know, your career, your professional life, you come from where?
I come from northeastern Wisconsin, a beautiful little place called Appleton.
Oh, that's a beautiful place.
It's as
y'all got
picturesque
apples?
As it
y'all
sounds.
Y'all got some orchards?
There are some apples. It was originally a town founded by paper mills and paper.
Yeah, it's more of an industrial. It's a small industrial town.
Yeah, on the river.
How do you know everything?
Well, because I've traveled extensively through the Midwest. They have a university there that I've been to. I don't know what
Lawrence University. Big liberal. Well, small in size, but well known liberal arts.
Oh, maybe
we have
to give Lawrence, Kansas.
Yeah,
not the same.
Okay.
Not the
same.
No. They're different.
Noted. Yes,
but it is like a really. I mean, they have a, you know. Like a lot of Midwest cities, they have a small and vibrant downtown that's trying to reimagine itself too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's much more exciting, I would say, now than it was when I lived there.
Right.
But I did live there from age 0 to 18.
Well, what was it like when you lived there?
I mean, it was cool. Like, it was a cool place to grow up. It was very safe, but not a lot of diversity, which I didn't even really realize until I moved to Chicago, and I was like, oh wow, there's like so many other things going on in the world. Like, it's a bubble, and it's not like a like in a like it's cool, like it's safe, it's like, you know, it's like a good place to grow up, good values, but it's definitely like I had to kind of realize that not everybody grows up like that. And I think just even though I traveled a little bit with my parents growing up, it didn't click until I moved here, and I was like, oh shit, like there's just so much happening outside of Appleton.
What did your folks do?
So my dad is a attorney. He's been he's practiced by himself pretty much his entire career, and he only does trusts, wills, and estate planning.
Oh, my mom does that too.
Hey, so it's very like very niche part of the attorney world.
Dry.
Very dry. No, you're never in court. There's no like, are you like, my dad is a
thankfully,
like a zen
though, that's
oh
like very
yeah
stressful.
No
that's,
totally
yeah, yeah. Litigation,
a good gig
litigation.
Actually,
my dad is the opposite of stress. Like, the guy is like a 100-year-old oak tree who is just like
that's
very grounded. He's amazing. Like, he's wise beyond all of his years. He's
I feel like
awesome.
Oak trees are wise.
Yeah, no, yes. He and he's that's a good fitting metaphor for him, because he's also a tree farmer, sort of. He has like a tree nursery with over 100 trees in it on my where my parents live now, not where they lived when I was growing up. But yeah, so, and then my mom worked prior to my brother being born. I have one younger brother who is 25. Wow. He's the same age as Chance, which is the only way I kind of remember that. But
no shots at your brother.
No. But it's weird. Like, having a younger sibling, you always, I think of them as like so much younger. But he's
they're
really
like
not.
Stuck
he's
in
25.
Age.
Like,
yeah.
He's a grown man.
Yeah.
But yeah, my mom worked in sort of accounting and bookkeeping until my brother was born, and then she was a stay at home mom, but like volunteer captain of the world. So. Mm. She was always everywhere at school, fundraisers, church, all that kind of stuff. So,
well, that's interesting, because you also have, you know, an increasingly large imprint in caring about things and causes in the city.
Yes.
And is that part? I imagine it's part of where
you... Oh, totally. My parents were very involved in the community, just especially involved in the church. Like, my parents are both Catholic. I was raised Catholic, went to Catholic schools my whole life, so that was like a big part of just growing up was volunteering. That it didn't even, to me, it wasn't even like a thing people don't do. I thought everybody just did stuff for the community. Like, that was just how I was raised. So yeah, it translates really well. Now it's like, oh, this is just part of me. I don't even think, you know, to me it's not even like a decision. It's just like, oh, we got to go do this thing.
And so who were you coming up? Like, what kind of kid were you? What were you interested in?
That's a great question. I was actually, it's funny, I always say rap music found me. Like, I didn't find rap music or hip hop, like, because where I grew up there weren't a lot of hip hop fans. It wasn't a thing. So growing up I was like, I honestly listened to some country music.
But yeah, but
I
mean, so,
like, where I was from, that was a thing. I was like definitely into some early country music.
Like who? Kevin McGraw.
I've been to a few Rascal Flatts concerts.
Is that a person? Oh, Rascal Flatts.
Kevin McGraw.
Yeah, I think he's married to somebody. I don't know.
No, Tim McGraw. Tim McGraw is married to Faith Hill.
Oh yeah, okay.
There you go.
I was like, you're not far off.
Confused with you. My favorite country poet.
Forthcoming country record.
Country rap. Yeah, poet.
I make country music from the country called Chicago. Anyway,
there you go.
Yeah. I hate you.
I was a big sports kid. Like, I was a tomboy, but then also my big passion in high school was golf, and my parallel life was as a pro golfer.
Interesting.
So when I came to the crossroads of like high school graduation and kind of deciding like, what do I want to go do? Where do I want to go? It was choosing between coming here to go to Columbia College and do music, or going to a small private school to play golf.
But let's backpack, because how did you even get interested enough in music to even want to think about going to school?
Have that choice.
And also, golf and music are like, it's like a split personality.
Like, right? The golf course, you know, is very quiet. Not a lot of like club banging.
I know. Do they play rap music on a golf course?
No.
Like, probably not.
The rap music thing came so much later for me. It's
but the
weird.
Music, though.
Yeah, the music was always there. I mean, my parents enrolled me in piano when I was in like fourth grade, but I didn't take to it. Really, but I always wanted to be around music, and I wanted to try a lot of different things. So I played alto saxophone and starting from fourth grade, really all the way until I was a senior in high school. So like 12 years.
You were marching band?
If you pull one out here, I was in marching band.
Or you could play.
I could play.
Yeah. Like, you're nice, is what you're saying.
I was nice. I don't know if I'm nice anymore. It's probably been like 8 years.
But also, playing an instrument and being in marching band is really hard.
Yeah, no, totally. And then, like,
did you actually play while you marched?
Yeah.
Okay, I fake 100%. Played. I fake played. I'm sorry.
No, I was like a band nerd. I was about it. Yeah, like, I put on for the school band. And honestly, I just want to say, I made that shit cool.
Was the marching band good, though?
Yeah. I mean, we were, so my graduating class was 100 kids. So I went to a very small school, like, relatively speaking. So, like, we knew everybody. But I was like, hey, band is cool, guys. Like, everybody should be in band. All my friends were in band. Like, it was just something fun to do.
How did you
know?
Make it cool?
Yeah.
Because I was cool. No, I'm just kidding. No, I mean.
No more explanation needed.
My thing in high school was, like, I was a quote-unquote popular kid, but I was friends with everybody because I liked so many different things. Like, I was good at sports, and so I had those friends, but then I was also in the school musicals. Like, I was in the pit orchestra playing guitar or percussion.
Oh,
so I was friends with all the theater kids. Yeah, because I could never stop. I couldn't just pick one thing. Like, I had to keep picking things up. But ultimately, I was like, you know what? I love music. I started going to concerts when I was in like 7th or 8th grade.
What's the first concert?
My very first concert was Fall Out Boy.
That's fair. From Chicago, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
All
right.
Chicago land.
To me, it was Chicago then, for sure. I didn't know the whole suburbs Chicago thing. But yeah, I just like always had a passion for music. There was something specifically about concerts, about the live experience of like all these people in one room just focused on one thing and so much energy and knowing all the words, and that was just something that was so cool to me. So I just knew I wanted to do something with that. I was always also like a kid that was very not advanced in like a smart way, but just in like a goal driven way. Like, I was like, I'm gonna buy a car when I turn 16, which didn't happen because I realized like cars are really expensive. But I had a job like the day I turned, I think it was 14 in Wisconsin, that you could legally work.
What was your first gig?
I worked at a bagel shop.
Oh,
all right.
Called Sue Ann's Bagels.
Are there Jews in Appleton, Wisconsin?
You know what? There are, because there was a synagogue that we visited as right. part of my Catholic education.
Oh, I was about right. to be like, are you Jewish? You just said you're Catholic.
No, no, no. I am not Jewish. But the bagel store was not Jewish affiliated, actually.
Were they good?
They were good. They were, okay. They were taught by some. I'm not totally sure.
I'm doubting your taste in bagels. So I'm not really sure.
Listen,
bagels even come from the Midwest.
I ate a lot of bagels.
Okay.
Bagels. I still get shit about how I say that word. But that was like
from the Midwest.
I was dedicated, like, as a 14-year-old. When you work at a bagel store on the weekends, you have to be there at like 6 a.m.
Early, right?
Yeah. And so I was like, I'm about this money. Like, I was like,
true.
I understand that there are goals.
Secure the bagel.
Right.
All right. Goodbye.
Okay, yeah, see you guys later. Good night.
It's dismissed. It's just me and you now.
That's how okay. it was, though. I was really, like, I don't know. I just always had this drive to like know if I want something, I'm going to figure out how I'm going to get it.
And but like, where did that come from?
I think my parents are both extremely hardworking people and are very honest. Like, the whole thing was always about like working hard and if you make the right moves, meaning like the moves that are good for like morality and for life and for people around you, that you can find success. And so it was just always. My parents were always like growing up, I was very like middle class kid. I went to school with a lot of kids that were very wealthy, being like going to a private school. And it was always just a mentality of like, save your money, you know, make smart decisions with your money. You don't need excess to be happy. It was just be smart, you know, like one thing my dad always says still to this day, he signs off all his emails, his calls, everything. He says, be wise. That's all he says. And like, I mean, he says like, I love you. But like, it's like, be wise is like his
facts,
thing.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
what was always like driven into my head was like, be wise.
Well, it makes sense given what you do. You kind of begin to see the shaping of the narrative in part that you were able to navigate the various social spaces of your high school combined with the morality and hard work ethic of your parents. But also,
the entertainment industry needs more of that shit, you know?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
It's just
a garden filled with snakes sometimes, you feel me?
Oh, and I love to play by the rules. I'm like a big Chance always like gets on me about like, you love rules. You love to play by the rules. Like, I call out cheaters all the time. I hate cheating.
Yeah.
I hate it. Because I'm just like, that's not how you do it. That's not fair.
Yeah, there's no way to, you know, get ahead by cutting around shit.
Yeah.
Well, so what brought you to Columbia and what brought you to Chicago?
And also, why did you say no to golf? Because I really need to know.
It was tough.
You got like a golf aura.
I see it now.
Yeah,
I did, you're
very calm.
To be honest, in high school, I was like a little hothead. I had a serious issue with authority.
But who doesn't in high school?
Yes.
Or their whole lives?
I don't know. I think it's a good quality to have, right? But it doesn't serve you well at a Catholic school, I will say. That challenging authority, really probably in any school, but yeah.
I feel like that's the best place to challenge authority.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, but they don't like it.
Yeah, that's why.
So I was always like, I was always not in trouble to the point of like suspended or anything like that, but I always just pushed too hard because I wasn't afraid. Like, I was like, you're a teacher, I can challenge you, but that doesn't work when you're well liked among your peers, because then it becomes this like mob mentality, and then the teacher is like loses control.
Anyway.
And like, anyway,
I'm more about the mob mentality.
Then my parents
let's fuck
get
some
called,
shit up.
And they're like, "What are like my poor parents?" All of high school were just like, just like, she's a good kid, like, don't, you know, like, just. And there were some teachers that really got me and could, I think, see my potential and see, you know, like, looking back, we're like, okay, yeah. But there were other ones that it just didn't work out. But golf, it was really tough, and I didn't do as well as I could have because I didn't have the calm. Like,
yeah.
I would get so upset, and I was like one of those kids that would like slam my club and like be mad.
Right, I think it feels like it requires a lot of patience.
Oh, it totally does.
But how would you push buttons when you were, you know?
Well, I mean, for one, there were things in Catholicism that I was just like, no, no, like, I don't think that's, that doesn't make sense. That's, and like, I remember I got, I really wanted to, so our school did like a pro-life protest trip every year to Washington, D.C., where they would go to the March for Life, which is like the huge pro-life thing. Okay. So like senior year, I was like, man, I want to go to D.C. Like, that sounds fun. The Smithsonian. They got to go to the Smithsonian, like all this cool stuff. Plus just, you know, taking trips in high school is like, you know, you're staying overnight in a hotel with all your friends.
Right.
So you tried to go, but they knew, somehow they knew it got around that I was not pro-life, that I was very much pro-choice.
Were there no other people who were pro-choice?
There were, but they didn't try to fake it to go on the March for Life trip like I did. And I was like, I was working, so I was like, I have the, it was like $200 or something. I was like, no, I
got
have
this
it.
Bread.
Like, I'm good. Like,
got and, this bag
and
of money.
I ended up getting like Goodbye. Pulled out, and the teacher was like, you don't align with the values of the March for Life trip, so you can't go.
Oh
and
God,
I was like,
but
what?
Like, let me be a little rogue ass, you know?
They don't like that in Catholicism. They're not with the
I'm so
the rogue.
Surprised.
I tried to start a gay straight alliance. They were not going for that.
Wow.
They were like, I
so
tried
to
call
it
the Rainbow Club. And I was like, it's not about being gay. It's about inclusion of just like everybody.
And solidarity, too.
They
right? That's part of what the GSA is
They weren't
about.
Rocking with me.
So is it fair to say that you don't follow Catholicism currently?
No, I don't. I had to run away.
Say bye-bye.
But it's cool. It's cool. Like, I totally respect my parents' views and what they get from it. And they completely respect me and the fact that I just don't connect in that way with Catholicism.
That's good. Yeah.
Well, that's also a part of your story, I guess. I mean, when did you come out to your folks?
I think it was after my sophomore year of college. So I think I was 19.
Yeah.
And I hid it from them for like maybe a year. From the time, like, I the thing that was interesting for me was that because I didn't know any openly gay people growing up, and definitely didn't know any queer women, it was very foreign to me. So it just didn't really seem like a possibility. Like, I was like, in my mind, it was just that, like, I hadn't met the right guy yet. And I was always like, but my friends would talk about guys like that they would want to date or who they would like envision. And I was always just like, nothing's coming up here. Like, can't picture him. Like, beard, no beard. Like, I don't know. Like, what?
I don't care.
Yeah. And so it wasn't until I got to college and met all these like amazing queer people that I was like, oh, this is a thing. And then I was like, oh, well, I can't picture the right guy because it's a girl. Like, it's not a right guy, it's a right girl. And then it all clicked super fast. Yeah. And I was really fortunate to be in an environment that's, I mean, Columbia College is like one of the most probably queer friendly campuses in America, honestly. So it was just really, it was really easy for me to accept it. I think I just didn't know how to tell my parents. And I didn't really know how they would react. Like, they're very tolerant and open and kind people, but it's still like a yeesh. Like, I don't know. You know, like, we don't have any gay people in my family. Like, we don't, my parents don't, I think they do have a couple like gay friends, but not that we were like close with per se growing up. So it was definitely a weird, I was just like, how do I even.
Well, it's like
say
they're
this?
Cool with other people, but when it's their kids, it's a whole other story.
Yeah. Like, and so I was just like, oh, God. Like, I don't even want to. And my, like, since I didn't date in high school, really, like, it was never a topic. Like, me being romantic, like, or with anybody was never something that we really talked about. So it was definitely a weird thing.
So
but
how did it go down?
I. It was very calculated on my part, really. Like, I mean, I just knew it. If you haven't come out to your parents, you know the feeling. It's just such a burden.
Also, I feel like they know, right?
Well, mine didn't.
Oh. So,
and I mean, some I think totally do.
Yeah.
But mine had absolutely no idea.
Mm.
Which I didn't know, you know, before. Like, I didn't, like I said, I was just like, I'm just going to come to you with this information. But I waited until my mom was driving me. I don't remember if it was to school or home from school. And I was dating a girl at the time. And I had to say it. Like, I couldn't. At this point, it was like I was hiding things. Like, my mom would be like, oh, what are you doing? And I'd be like, oh, I'm just with my friend. You know, like, it was starting to get. And my mom and I especially are very close. Like, we would talk almost every day when I was in college. So I just felt really bad, like, lying. And so I was like, all right, I got to figure out how to say this. So I waited until we were in a car and she was driving. So there was no, like, escape route for her. She had to sit and listen to me. And I just said, oh, yeah, one of my guy friends who she knew was gay. I was like, yeah, he's dating this new guy or whatever. And she was like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, yeah. And so we can go on double dates. And she was like, what? And I was like, yeah, like, I'm dating somebody. And she was like, oh, who is he? And I was like, she. And my mom was like, wait, what? And it, to be honest, like, the whole thing really just caught her totally off guard.
Interesting.
And I'm so blessed that, like, both my parents were so accepting and so supportive. Like, it was never a issue, but it's been interesting to hear my mom's perspective because, you know, she talked about as a parent, you envision this whole life for your child and you sort of make up this narrative in your head of, like, who your child's going to be and what their life's going to be like. And so to have this curveball, you know, she explained to me was just like, whoa, like, everything I thought, you know, just kind of got thrown out the window. And again, if you're not from or have a lot of gay friends, it can be a really sort of, like, dissociating thing of, like, oh, whoa, like, I didn't see this coming. And that was the truth. Like, neither of my parents thought I was gay. And so that, yeah, it was like a shocker.
And also, you know, gay culture is like a whole other thing that, you know, if you have no into, you don't really.
Yeah. Which now we laugh about. Like, right. I'm like, shocker. Like, I had no boyfriends. Like, all, you know, I was, like, always idolizing girls and women. I played golf. Like, I'm like, come on, guys. There were signs. But
at that time, too, it wasn't. I mean, even those signs were not necessarily part of a popular discourse.
And we're like, totally. We're peers, you know? Like, I mean, my mom. I'm not gay, but, like, my mom would definitely never think. I didn't date anybody in high school, but she, you know, they just don't put things together.
No, not at all.
They're not exposed to that kind of.
No, it was total shocker. But again, like, I have the best parents. Like, they've been nothing but supportive.
Well, salutes to them. I mean, because that's obviously it doesn't always go that way.
No, yeah, no, not at all. Not.
So you came to Chicago, though.
Yes.
And you got involved in the music program at Columbia.
Yes.
In what capacity? What were you going to Columbia for?
My major was called Arts, Entertainment, and Media Management with a focus in music business. And when I... So the only thing I had really experienced in Chicago in terms of music was coming here for shows at the Metro. I'd come to a few when I was in high school. Because no one comes to Appleton, Wisconsin. It's not like a hot tour stop.
Except Kevin Cole. I've been out there. You know, I've been to the Buffalo Wild Wings.
Ooh.
Is it close to Madison or
not at all?
Milwaukee?
2.5 hours from Madison, about an hour and a half north of Milwaukee.
Oh, it's north?
Yes.
So how far is it from here? Like 4 hours?
Like 3.5.
Oh, 3.
Yeah. But yeah, I moved to Chicago, didn't know anybody at all. Didn't know anybody in music for sure, and had just been to the Metro, thought that place was really cool, and I just immediately started trying to do whatever I could. So I, like, emailed them to try and get on their street team so I could pass out flyers, which I ended up doing for like 2 years, I think. And I just knew I at that time in my life I was just a hustler. Like, I was just.
So what are some of the things that you began to, so that, because that's a good early gig for anybody is working with the Metro, but where else, where were some of the other spaces, or who were some of the other people that you were beginning to kind of even be around?
Yeah, so I got involved with the Student Programming Board at Columbia, which was huge. So they book all of the shows, events, open mics, all that kind of stuff on campus. And it was there that I met the guy that kind of became my mentor. Shout out Sherrod Smith.
Hey.
Why does that sound so familiar that I can't?
Jamila Smith.
Oh, Jamila Smith.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was like,
And he was like, good dude. He's super, super good.
I've actually never met him.
He's the best.
Solid.
Yeah. Yeah.
New father.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
He kind of like took me to the side at one point after my freshman year and was like, what's your deal? Like, who are you? I've noticed because he was the faculty advisor to the student programming board, but he was super hands off. Like, his whole thing was like, this is y'all's thing.
Right.
You guys have to do it. Like, I'm just here to make sure you don't fuck it up. So that's how it was. So I didn't even, like, I knew who he was, but he was kind of this elusive, like, figure who managed people and, like, was involved in the music industry.
Who else was he managing then, or who else? Or
well, at that time, I don't know if he was managing Milo Notice, but I don't think so. But he was kind of well connected through like some of the from the like Cool Kids era and like even some of the like post Kanye sort of like that those type of people. So he knew a lot of Chicago music people. And he just kind of pulled me aside and was the first person to be like, you have a talent here. What do you want to do with it? And I was like, I don't know. I've never been asked that question.
Well, my question is, how did you reconcile, like, you know, being a musician in your own right and kind of...
I was bad.
You weren't
That's
good?
How I reconciled it. Yeah, I was instant. Like, no, I mean, I wasn't not good, like, but it was always hobby status for me.
Oh, so it was like, never, I'm fucking brilliant. Like,
no, yeah. I didn't have it like that
at
all.
You didn't consider yourself to be an artist in that regard.
No, and I never wanted to be. Like, even playing music, I always loved playing other people's music. I've never enjoyed writing music. Mm. And I think it's just because it doesn't come naturally to me. It's so, like, when I would play, I've played guitar since seventh grade. It was always playing other people's music. It was always just playing along to songs or whatever, playing with a friend who was singing. But it never was even a thing of me like, do I want to be an artist? Like, no, it wasn't for me. I still don't like the spotlight. That's not like I'm not really comfortable there, I guess you could say. Like, I like the behind the scenes work for sure.
So from there, from even building with Sherrod and in Columbia, what are some of the next steps that you took in order to be immersed in the Chicago music scene?
Yeah, I mean, Columbia's nice in a way because it sets you on a track of, like, here's things you should be looking at. So, like, I did an internship with a company here called Music Dealers.
Hey, Eric and Brandon and those guys. Yeah,
yep.
Sure.
Sherrod and I actually co-managed an artist for a little while. Which was awesome, and I kind of kept booking and doing shows through the student programming board. So that's actually how I met my junior year. I helped book a show with Kids These Days and Alan Stone. So I had met Kids These Days. I was also DJing at this time.
That's interesting.
It's kind of a weird time in my life.
Right?
I was part of an all-female DJ duo called Lewis and Clark. And we did okay at the time. Like, we were playing shows at like Berlin, Lincoln Hall. We played a show at not like our headliners, but like we were support.
Those are great shows to play. Yeah,
DJed for like Nike. It was just like college money, sort of, but it was really fun. I enjoyed the aspect of, like, again, I wasn't the artist per se, but I was getting to contribute to someone's musical experience. So that was super. I just thought that was so cool to be a DJ. So yeah, I was doing that, and Sherrod had kind of thrown me a few more alley-oops, if you will, to kind of get some experience. And then it was my senior year. I graduated early, actually, and I had helped book Chance, and I don't even remember what the other band was, for my final sort of senior, like, end-of-the-year show. And after that, I moved to LA because I thought that was the
look. Yeah,
that was the look.
Did you have something set up out there? Or?
I thought I did. Not to put Music Dealers on blast, but they folded shortly after I moved out there. Even though they told me that I could work out of their LA office, and then I got there, and the LA office shuttered.
Yeah.
But it was cool. Like, it worked out because I moved out there thinking that I had a little bit of money saved up. I knew I could float it for a couple months. And like 2 months later, Sherrod actually recommended me to another Columbia grad who worked at Universal Music Publishing. They were looking for an assistant in their urban department. And I applied for the job and did like 4 interview rounds and got it. And so that was sort of like my first big like, oh, I really am doing this music stuff. Like I work in the music industry now.
At what point did you really start loving rap though?
Definitely when I moved to Chicago and started listening to Kanye.
Had you not consumed?
I had heard Stronger. That was like the that was like the radio song when I was. Right. I remember when I turned 16.
Isn't the hands the video with it? No, I don't know.
It's the.
That was like the Daft Punk sort of. But when I remember when I got my driver's license when I was 16, I burned a CD to put in my car, and Stronger was the first song on the thing. But that was like my extent of hip hop. Was like that and Lil Wayne Lollipop. Because those were on like our Kiss FM. Mm. But then I moved to Chicago and I was like instantly surrounded by culture. And all of my friends were like, you've never heard of this? You've never heard of that? And I was like, no, I'm from Appleton. Like we don't have it up there. But that's when I heard College Dropout, heard Late Registration, heard Graduation. And I was like, oh, and that's all I listened to for like a solid amount of time. And yeah, felt like I was like integrating myself.
But when was Chicago. What did you discover for yourself from that point?
I think I just I enjoyed the honesty and like the rawness, I think, of hip hop. And I had never really known about like the roots in poetry and in writing, and like a lot of the music I had listened to was just radio, but also then, you know, I grew up in, like, when I was in high school, it was like Kazaa and LimeWire and like those things. So I could find some stuff on my own, but it was just being here and surrounding myself with totally different types of people than I grew up with. That was just sort of, I think, helped build my taste and just exposed me to way more. Like, I came here as like a little, I don't know, like a little cocooned butterfly. And then like, as I slowly sort of met people in Chicago, like I think it, the whole city just helped me open up and see what else was out there. And there was so much. It was like, I couldn't eat enough, you know?
You worked for Universal for how long?
For about, it was like a year. They didn't get me very long. Okay. And it was funny because when they hired me, they were like, the last person left after 8 months. Like, we need someone who's going to be here for 5 years. And I was like, I got you. Like, mm-hmm. I am ready to do this.
And that was out of the LA space?
Yes. Yeah, I worked at the big label office in LA with all of the Universal and all of them. The whole umbrella of family.
And so how did Chicago get you back?
Chance the Rapper stole me back to Chicago. Yeah, he, so I had known him here. Actually, the first time we met, the guy that lived in my garden unit of my apartment. So I lived in the same apartment all through college, right off the Belmont Red Lines top in this like 3-flat. And these kids fresh out of high school moved into the garden unit and were just like super cool. And Chance was always over there kind of hanging out. I guess at one point he actually like lived with them for a little bit. And I just met him that way. I after that I kind of heard a little bit about him, like 10 Day. And I was friends with some of the guys that were kind of doing blogs at the time. And we just kind of kept seeing each other. I kind of became friends with the kids these days, guys, through DJing. And eventually then booked the Chance show for here at Columbia. I went out to LA. I actually went to one of his shows out there, saw him. He was like, oh yeah, Colleen from Chicago. And I was like, yeah, what's up? And then he actually came over to Universal. Someone was doing a session and I saw him over there and he was like, oh, you work here? And I was like, yeah. And then went to a couple other shows that he had out in LA and just like one day was like, hey, if you ever need anything, like, let me know. Like, I work at Universal, I work in music, but not really, it's not the best, you know? And he surprised me by saying, yeah, actually, you know, it's just Pat and I right now, and we could use somebody, honestly. And so I was like, oh, shit, okay, cool. Well, I mean, let me know. And, I mean, it took a while. Like, it took probably That was in the summer. I remember it was around my birthday, so in August.
What year?
It was 2013. So Chance was actually on tour with Mac Miller at the time. And that's when I asked him. And then I came back to Chicago for Thanksgiving of 2013. And he had two shows at The Riv. And so I worked those just kind of like, hey, I'm around, you know, like PA sort of thing. And then him and Pat moved out to LA that winter. And at that point, it was like we knew I was going to work with them, but nothing was like formalized. So I just kind of helped them out with the house that they got and kind of got them settled. And then it was like, okay, like we're ready. Here's what we can give you weekly. You could quit your job. And so I was like, all right, well, went to Universal. I was like, 2 weeks. See ya.
What was it about Chance and Pat and what they were starting to build that attracted you to them as opposed to, you know, remain with a proven entity?
I think I was so, like, the label thing to me, like, exposed itself so quickly. And not the people I worked with were really cool. I actually worked with a whole team of women, which is like unheard of on the, especially on the creative side of music. And so that experience and that part of it was really cool. But the way I saw the machine operate and the way it chewed up, I was working in publishing, so mostly writers and producers, but the way it chewed those people up and just spit them out and left them for like dead, essentially, like, hey, we're gonna sign you for $200,000, then just so you know, you owe us that $200,000. And trying to watch people come back from that, I was just like, this is so lame, like this isn't the way to do it. And I just felt like, oh, thank you, I just felt like it to me so quickly just became, I don't know, I was like, this isn't, I don't think this is it, like this, the first of all, the people who are actually making the music aren't making any money. Like, they're literally just taking these huge loans from the music industry and never being able to pay them back because everything I would book would get put on their tab, like travel, studio sessions. Like, and I would just watch these numbers go up and up and up and up, fully knowing. And on the other side of that, having writers and producers call, like, I don't have any money, like, I need more this, or I need a flight to here, you know. And it was just sad to me. I was like, man, I love music so much, I'm not trying to be a part of this thing that is like that I felt was detrimental. And the Chance thing was just kind of simultaneously going at the same time, and I was like, man, this is the new wave. It's like, right, do it yourself, don't let anybody tell you what to do.
So you've been in a, you know, you've been with them in this ride, and now it is y'all.
Mm-hmm.
How has your role developed, grown, changed? You know, for those that don't know, if you can kind of talk a little about not only your trajectory within that camp, but also just the growth of the of what you do in that space.
Yeah, I mean, when we started, it was me, Pat, and Chance on like a day-to-day basis. We had one security guy. We had Kara, his booking agent, and we had Peter, who's still his lawyer. Like, what's cool about our team that I think is really unique is pretty much everyone who's been there is still there. So I think when I started, and it's still the mentality we have today, but it's just whatever needed to get done, someone was going to do it. So whether it was like PR or just something simple, like we need a new mic, or what we could need to rent an Airbnb, like whatever it was just get it done. So I think I technically started like as I was hired as his assistant, but that quickly became sort of irrelevant as we're, I like to think of us as like a small business. I mean, that's essentially what we are, yeah. Right? Like we have less than 20 employees, you know, like we're very small business, and that's how we operate. We outsource where we need to, but everything stays in house. So I think when I started, it's definitely been a learning curve, but that's what's cool about the way we do things is we get to figure it out. You know, there's no one telling us like, okay, you have to do this, or you guys need to move this way. It's always just been, hey, let's sit down and figure out what it is we need. Okay, we need a business manager. Let's interview some business managers. Or just whatever it is, we've just kind of figured it out. So that's kind of where I started, but as we grew, I think I just kind of became, I don't know, we kind of operate on like this, we joke that we're like a board of trustees to Chance, so we kind of move in this very communal and groupthink sort of way of decision making. And I mean, Chance is the boss, whatever, you know, what he says goes. And ultimately, I think what's really special about our team is that we all trust him 100%. So if he wants to move a certain way, has an idea, we're like, yep, that's it, you know, because it's worked. And that's, he's sort of the, he's the Steve Jobs of this whole thing, right? So we trust his vision, and we're there to make sure it happens. So I think my responsibilities have grown a lot, because now I'm not just in charge of like McDonald's and, you know, making sure he, I don't know, his car insurance is paid or whatever. But now it's sort of like bigger things. You know, the budgets are bigger. The personnel is bigger.
Well, and you've also, you're obviously, your role has increased, and you've, you know, you are fully integrated into the, you know, intimacy of that small circle. In my, yeah. I've heard people describe you as such, and I don't know if you think this is fair or not, but you know, you're one of his managers at this point. And I know, yeah. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, Pat, I think the distinction of Pat and I is sort of like I handle all of the quote unquote day to day stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
So you know, you're just getting him places and scheduling, and you know, Pat and I have. We're like a yin and yang. Like, we balance each other really well, and we trust each other. So if someone needs something, boom, it's done, you know? There's no sort of, there's no question. Like, it's a handoff. It's like a quarterback running back relationship, you know? If someone's going to run it, okay, it's there, and we're off. And that's just, I think that's how it's got to be, you know, to be at this level. Like, I joke that we're in the NBA of this, but we really are, you know, like we're in the professional leagues, and you got to practice and play like that.
I mean, Chance is obviously very famous. Like, how do you deal with that? You know,
it's so annoying. No, I'm just kidding.
Or are you, I mean, it,
or is it something to deal with, or?
Yeah, I think, I feel very lucky that, I mean, you obviously know Chance really well, Kevin, but like, he's the same guy. Like, I think fame changes people no matter what, because it's going to mess with you when people assume things about you, when they meet you, people recognize you.
Or they want things.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, there's a whole slew of terrible things that come with being famous that just ruin people, like really, really ruin people. I mean, I've sat front row for this fame thing, and like, it is ugly. Like, and I really think unless you're someone who is very grounded, has a strong support system, especially outside of like your work support, because those are the people that unfortunately tend to become yes men because they're being paid by you. But so if you have a strong support system outside of that, I think you have a shot. But if you don't, it's so scary. Like, it is.
Well, like you, you know, he comes from hardworking Midwest people.
Mm-hmm.
And those things will keep you grounded.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
You know, I think one of the best examples of this for folks who may or may not be listening, you know, if you listen to him in the Joe Budden podcast, you get to hear just how he is.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you know, I think that is as good of a public view into, you know, the young man, you know, I knew since he was a teenager, to just being that kind of authentic self in a space that I think typically people will not be.
Yeah.
So that seems significant. And I think it, you know, in part because of you, because of Pat, because of the people he's, you know, selected to have around him to keep him, you know, on his square, I guess.
Yeah, I think he expects us to check him if something, you know, if he does something crazy, or, you know, and we have a good enough relationship that we can, you know, we don't always agree. That's good. You know, we shouldn't always agree. He's not paying me to agree with him. He's paying me to advise him on his life. I mean, at this point, you know, like not necessarily his life decisions, but his career and how he's moving and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think it's you gotta have this the like support around you, or it just gets ugly. I mean, it is. Yeah, there's so many good things that come with fame, I think, and there's so many amazing opportunities and ways you can help people, but it is, it's, I think, one of the most dangerous things to the human psyche that exists out there.
Yeah, I mean, he's really revolutionized music, though, you know, that's really wild. As far as the good things he's, you know, that have come from it.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, it's been cool. I think we bought in early, right? Like, I think Pat especially, and then I came along and I was like, this is it, you know? Like, this can work, and we're going to prove it can work. And I think that's been one of the most beautiful things that's happened to the music industry is Chance, honestly. From the Grammys thing to where that whole thing, you know, becoming eligible based on streaming, to just the amount of little things that artists are now able to get into their deals that they weren't able to get 10 years ago, because they now have a leverage that they don't even have to speak about, but that everybody knows, hey, we don't have to do this. We could go the Chance the Rapper route and do this on our own. That doesn't even have to be said to know that you come with more leverage nowadays, because the labels are now sitting back like, oh, they don't need us. We need them, which is how it's always been pretty much. But now it's like you could say that if you wanted to.
Right. It's like Chance coupled with SoundCloud. And I guess like just the way internet and streaming have changed everything, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, this would have been almost impossible back when record labels owned like printing presses and stuff, you know, like there was a monopoly.
You couldn't press your own vinyl. You couldn't.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, honestly, I think Chance probably would have figured out a way to press his own vinyl. Like, he would have worked and then bought a vinyl shop, you know, like whatever, press. But yeah, it was much more difficult. But now with streaming, it's like there's just so many more opportunities, and you don't have to sell yourself. Like, you can keep ownership of what you have and partner. That's what we're all about, is like making good partnerships, making good business partnerships, not artistic necessarily, like, but business moves.
Well, and I think you guys as a team have figured out how to, you know, flatten corporations and, mm-hmm. you know, and also democratize in some ways like a revolutionary spirit in terms of how you will talk directly with fans and with consumers I think that is embedded in a Chicago spirit, and I think you guys have in a lot of ways perfected it. I know that's an ongoing part of your job, you know, is to navigate those spaces.
Yeah. And like the level of accessibility, you know, like y'all just around. I mean, you know, and if you're in Chicago and whatever, you get it, but in other cities people aren't around. Like, famous people aren't as accessible or just in sharing the same space as you. Also, I'm like, I'm kicking it.
I think that helps. I think for sure it helps Chance, because it's sort of like a reality check every day of like, I mean, yeah, I'm not the same as everyone else in Chicago. But at the same time, like, if I'm moving around the city, if I'm showing up to different events, big, small, whatever, like, it just keeps a sense of like connectedness with where he's from, you know, and like with the city. And I think it kind of just works both ways. Like, I think it's beneficial for him, but it's also beneficial for the city. Like, he's not just a mouthpiece doing stuff or a guy writing a check from LA, you know, like, he's really here. And I think that shows people that there are people that care, you know, and there are people who make it and then turn around and give back. It's not all bad, even though it can seem really bad these days.
So for you, and I love the young man. I mean, we could talk about him all day, but have you signed up for life? Like, how do you know what I mean? Like,
I don't know if I did when I started. I don't think I knew when I started, but now, yeah, I'm a lifer.
Okay.
I think what we have, specifically what Chance and I have, is so special, and our relationship is so...
Because you guys are together and have been maybe damn near daily, right, for years.
Yeah, for this is my, this is year five.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's funny, he's about to get married, right? But, like, I know I've been probably seen him more than his fiance.
Easy.
Which is so,
easy.
Like, I'm like, that's so crazy. Yeah. But, yeah, no, but it wouldn't be that way if we didn't have the relationship we have, you know? Like, we don't get sick of each other. Like, we don't, we have a ton of respect for each other. And I just know from the other work I've done, from talking to other people, other assistants or day-to-day managers or whatever, that what him and I have is really special and has room to grow still. So it's like, until I feel like we've tapped out, you know, like what's the point? Where would I go necessarily that I could be afforded the same opportunity? You know, if I came to him tomorrow and said, hey, this is a project I'm really passionate about, will you work on it with me? He'd be like, hell yeah. So it's that type of like, I know it seems like I do a lot for him, but it's like he actually does a lot for me too.
Well, so what are some of the things that you're excited about then coming up, moving forward in the future? What are some of your, you know, the things that you are?
It's a great question. We just had a really good meeting today about some film projects that we're working on. So like I was actually a executive producer on Slice as well.
Congrats.
Thanks. Yeah, so cool. Cool. It was like our first little toe dip into the movie.
It's very cool. It's very cool.
It's a funny ass movie. But yeah, I'm what's exciting? I don't, the thing with Chance is like, you never know what he's going to say or come up with next. Like there's things I've done that I'm like, I would have never thought I could do that. Like pulling off weird, you know, the Magnificent Coloring Day, like experience thing that we did. That was like just a weird, which is funny because now like Ariana Grande just did the same thing with her little pop-up thing. So I'm like, oh, we're on to something in some of these things. Like people are really watching. But I don't, I mean, I think ultimately like in my life and my goals, I love sports. So I would love to eventually do something specifically with women's soccer. I'm a huge women's soccer fan. So I feel like, there we go.
I'm sorry,
there's another one, right? So I would love to do something there. I don't know. I think it's kind of cool because we're just, obviously I'm super involved with the Chicagoist thing that's going on. I'm kind of like his second in command there. It's cool because it's like unlimited possibilities, you know, like the guy's super well connected. We have a lot of resources that we've built at this point. So I'm
feel
just,
like you've done
come
a
to
lot.
Me with ideas, man. Come yeah. to me with your ideas.
I feel like you've done a lot, but it's still like the tip of the iceberg type shit.
I hope so. I hope we're like that picture of the where the iceberg's only like 3 inches on the surface and then underwater it's like 30
right, thousands
feet.
Of like the fuck.
I hope that's us.
I mean, the best is yet to come, and it's yeah. in part because you guys have chose to invest in one another and in, you know, the maintenance, like your roots in the city. You know, so I mean, that's significant. Where can people, if they desire or if you desire them to, where can people find you on the internet?
So the only thing that I have left is Twitter. You can follow me at The First Colleen, all spelled out. I had to privatize my Instagram because there were too many
wild
Chance.
Oh yeah, you told me that
coming
Chance
at me.
Fan 235.
Exactly. So I had to, unfortunately, privatize that and start purging.
People really go wild on Instagram more than Twitter.
Yeah. Well, and I also started getting the, like, weird... there was a couple articles that came out that were, like, I was Chance's girlfriend. Okay. Which is, like, problematic in its own... Right. Like, I take huge issue with... Like, I actually do speak on panels and stuff about women in music. So it's like a whole other thing that bothers me about like women not having respect in the workplace and like why I couldn't be there as any other profession other than his girlfriend. But there was stuff like that. And like it was, I mean, it was my face. Like people were putting two and two together on Instagram and stuff. And so I was like, this isn't it.
You know, there are pictures in articles. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's
yeah,
quite
and
wild.
I'm like, what? Like, I am a gay woman. Like, come on, guys. Do a little bit of research. At that time, my Instagram was public. So, like, find me and you'll see that, like, there's
ask
a rainbow in my bio.
Questions,
like,
fam.
I'm like, not. Right. So I had to tone it down.
Fair enough.
Because I'm not the spotlight one. Like, I need my private life. But yeah. Twitter, I like to get a little reckless every now and then.
I feel like you do some funny things. Also, your profile picture is like a those dogs.
Dog with a ponytail.
But it's like one of those really skinny ones with like a lot of hair, right?
Yeah, I just saw that, and to me it was so damn funny. Everyone I showed to is like, that's not that funny. But I think it's hilarious, so that's my avi, if you will.
Well, you also drop some inspirational gems on there, too. You know?
Yeah, so. I try and keep a good balance of, like, funny commentary, being socially aware, and then just, like, ridiculous.
That's the best balance, though, you know?
Yeah, my Twitter is, like, low-key popping. I only have like 2,000 followers, so.
Well, Colleen, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for spending some time with us.
Yeah.
Appreciate
this was great.
You. Yeah, you're great. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the Corner Store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the Corner Store at Corner_Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the Corner Store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.